Locked On Nets, we have something a little bit different for you guys coming at you. We're going to do three segments, one before the game, one at halftime of the game, and one post-game, giving you a live look in at our thoughts and opinions. Hope you enjoy.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back. Josh Bass joining me. He made the trek down to my apartment. Is Marcus Barahal. Marcus, I'm sipping on some Sauvignon Blanc, getting to talk Nets with one of my good buddies. And we are awaiting action here. Nets Jazz, it's about 5 minutes before tip-off. Exciting stuff, right?
Yeah, thanks for having me over, Josh. I appreciate you being honest with the people that you're drinking a little wine. You're LeBroned out right now.
I'm LeBroned out.
You're like a fine wine yourself. You know, you're getting better with every podcast, I think.
That's a very good comment. I don't know if I want to be compared to LeBron that much these days. I feel like he's more of a red wine guy, though.
Yeah, that sounds right. That's like more of like a, no offense, it's more of like a manly wine.
Excuse me? Yeah. Well, for drinking, I like white wine, but for my baths, like Amari Stoudemire, I do purely red wine.
That's fair.
Yeah. So we're getting ready for tip-off, Nets, Jazz. Figured we tried something a little bit different. Obviously, coming up, each game is more and more important. Marcus, Damari Carroll is going to be back tonight. Shabazz Napier is still out, and not too big of a loss, but also Alan Crabb has his knee being drained. He's going to be out tonight, and then against the Clippers as well. Definitely cuts into the Nets' depth on the wing.
Yeah, and it's going to be big for Caris LeVert, who now has to kind of like step up. We both had talked about in the last couple episodes how limiting his role might be like what was best for the team in the short term, and now it's kind of the opposite has to happen. So it's a lot of pressure on him to step up. Hopefully he can kind of look even like somewhat close to how he looked before the injury. That would be a big help for the team.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Was he the right person to move into the starting lineup for this game? Let's not be results oriented because it hasn't started, but we were talking before the last podcast how Dinwiddie and D'Lo need to be both playing 32 minutes a night. So I'm thinking this could have been a nice opportunity for Spencer to be elevated to the starting lineup. Then you let them play together for the first 5 or 6 minutes, take one of them out, and then are able to stagger it. So basically, they're both able to play a larger chunk of minutes versus having Caris elevated to the starting lineup where you have no idea if he's going to be able to produce a good output or not against a really tough defensive team in Utah.
Yeah, I think Dinwiddie's definitely the better player, but I guess maybe he's just gotten comfortable coming off the bench and like in that role. Because I remember even when D'Lo was out and you kind of figured that Dinwiddie would become the starter, they moved Napier up to kind of like keep Dinwiddie in his role and like switch things around that way. So I guess maybe that's what Kenny was thinking, where you already have one change with Crabb being out of the lineup, so you don't need to like push that change all the way down the line if you can just make one like bigger change, I guess, to supplement that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good point. Also, maybe Caris is better suited to have the initial matchup on Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's definitely like kind of their only offensive threat. Like they're more of a defensive oriented team with Gobert and with Rubio, and like they have a lot of defenders on the team and not a lot of guys who can create their own shot. So obviously stopping Mitchell is like the biggest key, I guess, defensively.
Yeah, he's really the one guy that can carry them. I mean, they have guys that can get hot for a stretch, whether it be Joe Ingles, Jay Crowder, Rubio, as you mentioned, but Mitchell's their most consistent scorer in volume. So it'll be interesting to see. Also, I am looking out for the Jarrett Allen versus Rudy Gobert matchup. I think Gobert is the type of center that can just swallow Allen up, but hopefully he'll be able to be efficient with his shots, and really the key is to be able to get Gobert off the offensive glass, because that's going to be the main way Utah is going to beat you, because they're not the most efficient offensive team. They really rely on just crashing the glass with Gobert and Favors.
Yeah, and if the Nets can kind of run around screens like Joe Harris specifically, whoever Donovan Mitchell's guarding basically, to try to target him on defense, not that he's a bad defender, but just tiring him out, since he is the only guy who can create a shot. If you can like take away his legs, that obviously can help you on both ends of the floor. So I think in the past, the Nets have kind of done like a pick and roll to get the center switched onto D'Lo or Dinwiddie, which would be Gobert in this case. But I think it might behoove them to kind of just try to find Mitchell and target him, almost like the Cavs used to do with Steph Curry in the finals a few years ago. So I think tiring him out would be a big key on offense.
Yeah, have to tire him out. I mean, I think the Nets are going to get tired from the altitude. Marcus, we played basketball when we visited Gavin at school in Arizona, so definitely not Utah, but close enough. And we were both, I mean, look at us, two guys in great shape.
We're very
and
fit.
And even we were winded.
Yeah, no, it's a real thing. I mean, it's one of those things where you probably don't notice it right out of the gate, but then you just get tired sooner, I think, than you would, and probably like more so than you would. So it's not something that you'll necessarily see right from opening tip, I don't think, from Brooklyn, but maybe like by the back end of the first quarter or even into the second and third, it could play a factor for sure.
Yeah, and also whoever's the four, it's going to be Kurucs, and then if Damari ends up having a good game, that's going to be huge because, you know, you can draw Gobert out of the lane, but they can still have Favors slide in and protect the rim. So if the four is able to, I mean, Favors is a very good, I think extremely underrated all-around player, but he's not at his best defending out on the perimeter. So if Kurucs and Damari have their threes going, that could be a huge advantage for the Nets if they can get hot and just steal a win here. Because if they could get one of these two coming up against Utah and the Clippers, that would be, I think, 90%+ chance of them getting into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's super important to at least just take one of these. I don't think you need to try to like win every game like we talked about. It's just like finding a couple that you can steal because the Nets aren't going to be favored in pretty much any game like we've talked about. So this is definitely one that they can win. So hopefully they do. I think the game's about to start.
Let's do it. We'll be back at halftime.
See ya.
We're back. It's halftime. Marcus, we watched something that I guess would be called basketball. I'm not sure if the Nets knew that this was an important game. It looked like they did at the start. They were up 21-18. And then the last probably about 18 minutes of the first half has been one of the worst experiences of my life.
Oh my gosh.
Miserable.
Yeah.
I don't like them disappointing you when you're in my home.
You invite me over for this?
Yeah, I want to show you a good time.
Appreciate that. Yeah, this was not great. I mean, it was kind of like we thought in some ways where the game started out pretty well, and then I don't know if it was because of the altitude, but the Nets just kind of ran out of gas, I guess, about like 8 minutes into the game or so. Mm-hmm. And the Jazz, I think, went on a 17-0 run, something like that.
Yeah.
So obviously that's not good. But at the same time, they're down 17, so really it was just that one run, and other than that, it's been even. So that's maybe a silver lining, like the Jazz were hot and the Nets couldn't hit a shot over that stretch. At the end of the first and the beginning of the second, the Nets did play well at the beginning. Rhodey Krugs looked really good. Would like to see him get more minutes. Obviously, he's in foul trouble, as a few Nets are. But even still, I mean, at a certain point, you just kind of have to play the guy because, like, what are you saving him for at this point?
Yeah, I mean, Kurucs has to, regardless, if he picks up his fourth foul.
Right, the game will be over anyway.
Yeah, they need some sort of spark plug because Damari Carroll's not getting it done. Jared Dudley played for a few minutes and had a couple nice plays and nice rotations, but not really doing too much. Graham was a disaster. They just need a spark plug right now. And
yeah.
I think me and you both have some problems with the way that Spencer Dinwiddie, D'Angelo Russell, and Joe Harris have been attacking Gobert. Dinwiddie did get better of late and started 0-5, but has hit four of his last five shots, including some nice layups at the rim. But Marcus, what are they doing wrong when going at Gobert?
Yeah, I think Dinwiddie kind of figured it out at the end of the half where he was kind of going into his body to negate his ability as a shot blocker. Because up until that point, whether it was Russell, who's 4-for-15 in the half, or Dinwiddie,
no free throws.
Yeah, or Dinwiddie or LeVert, all those guys were kind of getting around the pick and then getting to about the free throw line and trying to throw up a floater over him. Which I know D'Lo's had success with his floater, and he's got a really nice touch in the mid-range. But with Gobert, you kind of have to shoot it even higher than you normally would.
Mm.
And I think either, like, all the shots are either think with that in mind, and they're kind of coming up short on all their floaters, or they're not putting it in mind, and Gobert's just swatting it. So Dinwiddie kind of did a nice job at the end of the half of driving into his body and kind of pushing him back to a point where he can't then jump up to block the shot, or if he does try to, it'll be a foul. So I thought that was the right move, and I think you pointed something out about the screening.
Yeah, the screening's been really bad from both Jarrett Allen and Ed Davis. It's a combination because the screens are being set way too close to the basket. They should be set like the Jazz are doing, setting them 30, 35 feet out so the guard has time to really run into his pull-up three. Because With the Nets, as you mentioned, they don't want to attack Gobert. It's just not going to be successful. So they need to be able to hit that pull-up three. But Ed Davis and Jared Allen are setting that screen right at the three-point line. So then the guard has no choice but to, as soon as they get past that screen, they're already at 20 feet or so, and then they're going to make their way to the basket. I thought Ed Davis just had no impact on the game. And it's rare to see that, but he just didn't have energy. He looked gassed at the end of the half. Donovan Mitchell was getting offensive rebounds over the Nets. They just don't seem prepared right now.
Yeah, Mitchell had one in traffic where it was just four Nets around him, but he was the one who came up with the rebound. He's playing hard, obviously. And that partially goes back to just boxing out. Like, LeVert didn't really box him out at all on that end of the floor. And I think Mitchell had two offensive rebounds. Mm-hmm. But just going back to the screening thing, I think that's a great point, just because it adds another option that you can put in offensively. Because right now, it's just like, once the Nets come around that screen, it's either try to throw up a floater over Gobert or kick it back out and reset. Whereas if they had that extra space, the pull-up three is an option. Maybe then you pull Gobert out a little bit further and allow for someone to back cut, or you can kind of blow by him with a little more space.
Yeah, and it's probably the most efficient shot they have right now. And they're not hitting their threes well, but even right now, they took 30% of their shots were from three in the first half. And when you look at the Nets for the season, they're at 40%. So against a team like Utah where shooting at the rim is not going to be as effective, that percentage should be higher than it is for the season. So they need to be shooting a larger percentage of their shots from three just to create some sort of variance and hope that D'Lo, Kurucs, one of those guys can get hot. Because right now, Dinwiddie had a nice stretch at the end of the half, but besides him, no one's getting it done. Damari isn't doing much. LeVert was 0 of 6, did not record a single stat outside of his field goal attempts. There was one play where he had that nice, he faked going to his left, then blew by his defender really nice to the right. Move. And like, someone came over and helped, but he should still have finished it and just was a little too much sauce on the layup.
Yeah, he double clutched it, I think, and missed it as a result.
He's unplayable right now, and it sucks because he's getting back into injury and he should have time to get into the swing of things, but the Nets are right in the middle of a playoff race and they can't afford to have someone like him who is taking a good amount of touches in the offense with just horrific efficiency.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, but I would like to see more looks for Joe Harris. I know he was 1 for 6, but it felt like he didn't really take a shot after the first 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of the point guards, like D'Lo and Russell and LeVert, when he had the ball, taking the shots themselves. I guess that's kind of where you miss Crabbe a little bit, where they can kind of kick it out to him and he can either be like a secondary or tertiary playmaker or be like a spot-up guy out there. Because they seem like they lack shooting a lot.
Do you think it's more like rescreening once that, if that initial look's not there, then just try it again, run the action just the opposite way?
Yeah, and I think that's the benefit of playing two ball handlers at once, like whether it's Russell and LeVert or Dinwiddie and LeVert or some combination of those three. Because if one of those guys comes around the screen and they're stopped either by Gobert or by whoever's inside, they can kick it back out to the other ball handler on the other wing and just kind of run and set the pick over there. So I think they're probably not making the best use of having multiple ball handlers on the floor. Like, they're kind of just almost like wasting that second ball handler by having them be a spot-up guy.
Yeah. What do you think of this? I think it might make the most sense if, especially if they're running that sort of planned action for a Joe Harris type, to have LeVert be the one initiating the offense, because if he's off ball, no one's guarding him. And then you have Joe Harris, D'Lo, Rhodey, and then Jared Allen sucking in attention to the middle. So theoretically, LeVert, if he has the ball, someone's going to be guarding him. And then there's more space to operate when the big man sets that pick for either D'Lo or Joe.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because, like you said, Karras is just not as good of a shooter in general, but especially these last couple games. So if you can put him on ball, I guess that's where he's most dangerous because he still has the blow-by speed and the ability to get into the paint. And if he's not finishing, he's a good enough passer where he could find like Jared Allen or someone slipping to the rim. I know he hasn't really done it in this game, but he does have that ability at least.
Theoretically, it could happen.
In a vacuum.
Yeah. We'll come back to you guys. Hopefully it's after the completion of the game because that means the Nets at least made it close. But you will definitely hear from us segment three at some point after halftime starts, and hopefully we'll have more cheery news to talk about, because Marcus, I don't like talking about the Nets when they're sucking.
No, you seem very sad, Josh.
I've done that enough. You know,
you were happy drinking at the start of this, and I'm worried you're going to start sad drinking in segment three. We'll see.
No guarantees, man. All right. No guarantees. Folks, the Nets have clinched a playoff spot. Unfortunately, it's the Long Island team that I don't care about. I think some people do out there. And the good Long Island Nets.
They're number one.
Theo Pinson. Yeah. Theo Pinson, Alan Williams are now in Brooklyn. We're recording this in the fourth quarter here. If the Nets make a great comeback, then we'll eat crow. And that would be a great pod to tell. But right now, they're currently down by 18. Spencer Dinwiddie got teed up in the third quarter. Derek Favors became the new Rudy Gobert. And it was a lot of the same.
Yeah, it seemed like the Nets had some momentum for a second at the end of the quarter. They cut it to 15. And I even leaned over to you and I said, maybe if they can get it to 10 or 12 at the end of the third. And then Favors grabbed what felt like 100 offensive rebounds. I think in actuality it was like 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
But they got a ton of chances and eventually he drew a foul, hit the free throws. Then on the other end, Dinwiddie kept complaining because I think he did get hit, but even still, he kept complaining, got a tech. It was 18. Then I think it was, or they missed, Joe Ingles missed the free throw, but they came down and Favors hit a little floater. Mm-hmm. So it was 19 after three quarters. So not great.
Yep, not great. The good thing is that Dinwiddie had a nice run, which included him making shots even after the whistle was blown, so they don't count, but they count in the minds of me and Marcus and in our hearts.
He hit two. He hit one in the first half and then one in the third quarter where Ed Davis set a moving screen and then Dinwiddie like hit the shot immediately after. So that could have been 6 points, Josh. That could have been that 15-point lead could have been a 9-point lead. Single digits we could have been talking about.
Absolutely. I know. It could have been a different game. We wouldn't be talking now even because it would be closer.
Yeah, we would have been waiting to record.
D'Angelo Russell and Caris LeVert, I think, are up to 33 combined shot attempts. They've made 8 of those, and they have 0 free throw attempts between them.
D'Lo did take the one free throw after the foul before
the free throw that he didn't deserve. But yeah.
Correct. They've earned 0 free throws,
So, I'm a bit good heavy. I'm a bit disappointed right now. I mean, at what point does Atkinson just say, listen, we're not going to win this game. We lost the battle. Let's try to win the war and then sit their guys and just hope for the best in the Clippers tomorrow and give your guys just a few more minutes of rest.
I think if it were me, I'd wait until maybe 8 or 9 minutes left in the fourth. If you can get it like under 15 by that point, I'd leave guys in. But if it's still 20 with like 8 minutes left, I'd probably pull people at that point. Right now it's 20 and there's 10:35 left in the fourth. Mm-hmm. So if you can go on a little run here, I think leave him in. But if not, I would pull guys.
Yeah. I mean, you pulled Alan Williams and Theo Pinson away from the clinching party in Long Island. They were going to hit up the bars in Huntington.
H-Town.
Yeah. You at least need to give them some time with the big club. You can't just have them sitting on the bench.
Friend of the pod, Mac Drexler, is going to take him out as Rodion Krugs lets a rebound go out of bounds. Yeah.
This has to be one of the worst games of the season. Like, it's really bad right now. There's just no sign of life.
Yeah, they've had bigger losses, but this just feels much more demoralizing, I think.
Yeah, because it's a game that they need to win. Rhodey makes up for it with a nice block. A game they really need to win. And Utah is a good team, but it's not like they're... I mean, they've gotten killed against Milwaukee and teams like that this season, but Utah's not those teams. They're a very good club that matches up well with the Nets, but they're not elite by any stretch.
No, and I think, obviously, Utah's strength is their defense, but at the same time, the Nets' strength is their offense, and they've scored a ton of points this season, and part of what has made them so good this year is that they move the ball, they're able to find open shooters and all that kind of stuff, and to see them still not yet at 70 points with just over 10 minutes left in the game, that's definitely tough, because that's kind of what the Nets have been known for, so it's kind of like Utah's forced them out of their identity a little bit, and Utah's hitting shots on the other end.
Yeah, and also talk about that insane Donovan Mitchell play.
Between the legs.
Yeah, who was it? LeVert that went for a steal, and then Donovan Mitchell just pulled the ball between his legs and then just went in for an easy layup, and then that was followed by a play where there was a missed shot, and Rudy Gobert came flying in, had an insane putback dunk.
Yeah, it was Rubio, I think, missed a little runner. And Gobert just jumped from what seemed like the free throw line. But Nets have cut it to 17 here, Josh. You feeling?
I'm feeling nothing but pessimism.
Yeah, it's tough to feel any other way. I mean, every time the Nets seem like they have a little run where they cut it to 15 or so, as they do right here, as D'Angelo Russell hits a little layup, then it feels like the Jazz either hit a big shot or are able to get offensive rebounds or some kind of momentum play that gets the crowd back into it, that famous Utah Jazz crowd that has been in the news lately.
Yeah, the very problematic Utah Jazz crowd. And right Jay on, Crowder gets a four-point play.
Right on cue. Every time that's cut it to 15, Utah with a big shot. Yeah.
But I'm not encouraged by if they're going to play like this against Utah. I mean, imagine how it's going to be tomorrow with guys like a really high-powered Clippers team, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, Danilo Gallinari, Landry Shamet. You know, Landry Shamet killed the Nets when he was with Philly. I think he could easily go off for four or five threes tomorrow.
Yeah, and you mentioned Montrezl Harrell, who's my third favorite player in the league after Siakam. Siakam 1, Dinwiddie 2.
Yes, Dinwiddie.
But Montrezl Harrell's going to be a load inside. Like, Jared Allen and Ed Davis have both, or Allen for more foul trouble reasons, but they've both struggled in this game on the glass against Gobert and against Favors. And Harrell's going to bring a ton of energy. He's not going to quit on any play, offensive or defensively. And with him and with Zubats, it's going to be another tough matchup inside for Brooklyn.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think when we're looking at the Nets playoff race right now, I was telling you this before, it's kind of like, it's the opposite of the show, The Million Dollar Mile, that's coming up, where it's like the LeBron, Tim Tebow type of show, where you have an average person running, and they're being chased by an athlete, and they just have to make it to the finish line and cross it without getting caught by the athlete. Because the Nets, theoretically, with the way they played the season, are the good team. And they're getting caught by these bad teams in Orlando and Charlotte. So even if the Nets play poorly, Orlando and Charlotte are still going to have to play well to catch them. But the Nets aren't doing their part right now. I mean, this is not... They beat some of these bad teams before, but they could have been up by more against OKC in the first half and then just got destroyed in the second half, lost that, showing no life against the Jazz. And it's not going to pretend well for this next few games coming up in this road trip.
Yeah, I mean, I outlined it in the solo pod, but they need to win that Heat game. And then if you can win either the Clippers game, the Lakers game, the Kings game, they have winnable games coming up. It's just a matter of stealing a couple of these. Because even if they're able to go, I'm going to assume this game's a loss. But then if they're able to go like 3-8 the rest of the way, it would still take like the Hornets or the Magic going like 7-5 to tie them. So, I mean, the thing is, like, the Nets can play really poorly, and they still might not get caught, just because the other teams are not very good.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I think the Kings game is going to be the biggest one. They need to win that.
Yeah, definitely. And, obviously you want to be playing well going into the playoffs, but if we're just talking about Brooklyn getting in, then they don't need to play crazy well. They just need to be, like, mediocre even.
Right.
But, I mean, if you want to, like, Brooklyn was probably... at least within the last few weeks, the team of that bottom four that most people said would give like a top four seed the toughest time, other than the Pacers, because I'm not really counting them. But and now if you're going in like limping and losing a bunch of your last few games, obviously that kind of takes some of the sting out of it and some of the momentum that the Nets had earlier in the year out of it.
Right. No, that's fair. I just don't think the Nets, if they don't play Indiana, which it's not likely, because who knows if Indiana will even get the 3 seed. I don't think the Nets are going to get the 6 seed at this point. I just don't think the Nets have the talent. Even though they played Philly well this year, they're not going to be able to compete against any of those top four teams. By talent-wise.
Obviously, yeah.
Indiana has had a great season. They've shown they can compete with the creme de la creme of the East.
Yeah, I don't think they would beat any of those teams, but I mean... I still think that the Nets could get a series to like 6 games, maybe. I think they're good at home. I could see them winning.
I mean, they're good at home. They're 21-16. It's not like, I mean, they're good compared to what they should have been, but they're still not good. Yeah, but
they started off so poorly that like
right.
Since the 8-18 start, I think they've been better at home. But yeah, obviously, I wouldn't pick them in any series, even like against the Pacers, I wouldn't pick them, but. It would just be nice to see them show some fight down the stretch to show that they will still be a tough out.
Yep, absolutely, I agree there. I think that they're gonna come out with a much better effort tomorrow against the Clippers than they showed tonight. I think there's no, I think it's very obvious. There's no guarantee of a win, but we'll definitely see a better effort. And I think Kenny's gonna rip into the guys, and maybe even a lot of Jared Dudley tomorrow, which I wouldn't be opposed to. But Marcus, when are we going to be back? Sunday night? Monday? What are we talking here?
Yeah, we can do.
We'll play it by ear.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll talk offline. But Marcus, thanks for joining me in person here today.
Thanks for having me over, Josh. Appreciate it.
For you all out there, please let us know what you thought of this idea. We liked it. It created minimum work for us.
It might have been cursed, though, if the Nets are going to lose by 20. So maybe it's the format.
No. Keep it positive. We gave a snapshot of our feelings pre-game, in the game, post-game, what have you. So I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I hope you guys did. Tweeted us your opinions at Locked On Nets. I am at JMBass_, where you guys are all tweeting about me and my dating life. Thanks, Marcus. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. I don't know. I don't really have... He's in a relationship, so I can't really...
Yeah, I mean, feel free to tweet at me asking me about my relationship. Yeah. It's good.
You're visiting your girlfriend in Florida this weekend?
Yeah, we're going to a little Miami trip, so...
Are you guys doing Miami?
Yeah, scouting the heat.
Okay.
Not actually, but...
You told me you were visiting her in West Florida.
Yeah, we're taking the trip. We're taking like a day trip there. Miami.
You didn't tell me that.
Well, overnight day trip.
You tell the listeners that, but not me?
Yeah, you know, I save it for the pod. You know, I wanted your organic reaction.
Yeah, I'll tell you some spots in Miami.
Okay, great.
But please rate and review and subscribe to the podcast. And we will speak to you again soon, hopefully on a happier note than we did today.
Take note. Bye.